And welcome to the Frozen Gamer Freezecast. It's episode number 433. My name is Housebound James Gilmore, and joining me today is locked in a room surrounded by snow, Emily Snowden.
You're the third person to use that joke today.
I'm sorry, if you're going to have that name, then we don't get to exploit it very much in the UK. But today's the day.
We are housebound, cold, and ready to talk about games, I think.
After complaining about the weather for a bit because we're British. This doesn't happen to us very often in the UK. We've gotten mad snow. That storm you've seen, which is cruising across Europe, hit us this week. Storm Emma. So all plans for the weekend have been scuppered. My partner's hen night's gone out the window. My role-playing adventure thing, I was going to do Cthulhu, Em. I was going to scare some friends with Call of Cthulhu. Because you thought I was a nerd by playing mobile games. Oh no, I also do role-playing. But that's gone out the window because everything's cancelled. You see what happens, listeners across the world, is in the UK, when a single snowflake falls and touches a train track, that's it. The entire country shuts down.
It's true. We just don't have the stuff to handle it, man.
No, we don't have the infrastructure because it snows not a thing that we're used to. So when it happens, we just look at it like really confused. And then all our cars skid off the road simultaneously. Every train falls off its tracks. All the planes just like skid off the bottom of the runway into the channel. And that's it. We're boned. We're all just boned.
Yeah, we're just a piece of ice adrift in the grand sea.
Pretty much. So welcome. It's cold here. It's cold where I am. My office has a Velux window because it's got a slanting roof thing. And all the light's been blocked out because all the snow is packed onto the glass.
That was like a... To be fair, that was pretty quite cosy.
Well, it's that frosted window effect they use on bathroom windows, except no, my window is just actually fully frosted with snow and I can't see anything. So yeah, this is where you find us, but because we all work from home, no snow home days for us. Everyone else's work is cancelled. My partner's home because she can't get to work, but no, we work on the internet, so it never stops.
This is true. This is the one time when our job is just less convenient than our partner's.
More difficult to pull a sickie. Oh well, not to worry. You've not come here to hear us whine. You've come here for the games. And luckily, there's a lot going on. So we've got news. Not one, but two Harry Potter games coming to your mobile phones. A Ghostbusters AR game. Do we even really need it? Tamagotchis, we got a release date. It's coming to your phone and you can have one and kill it slowly over a period of hours. Plus, a whole bunch of new releases, including the likes of Part-Time UFO, Outlast on Switch, Licht, Spear, and Evoland 2. And we chat to the creators of Alto's Odyssey, a developer that's quite familiar with snow and all of its fun uses. It's now moved to sand. We reviewed the game last week, and we're talking to them this week. But first things first, let's have some news. So we're going to try and bash through some news dead quick, because there's a lot of it. First thing, Kirby Star Allies has got a European demo over on the Switch. I've been having a look at the trailer, and it looks like some kind of... It's a delightful, you know, 2.5D side-scrolling Kirby-style adventure, all very familiar. The biggest Switch-related thing is four players simultaneously using four different Switch controllers on the same screen, and the ability to pair up all your four characters, they all link arms, and they form a friend circle.
Oh, so cute.
And they tumble down the hill, smashing enemies as they go. So it's quite a lethal friend circle, but still adorable nonetheless, because Kirby is never anything but cute.
Is he? I thought he was just pink.
That's quite cute, isn't it? By default. Although I suppose, you know those evil-looking mice? Have you seen those blind rat mice thing with the huge teeth?
The mole skin. Not mole skin. Mole rats.
Maybe. They're pretty gross and they're pink.
Oh. I like everything. I can't say that. Also, it was in Kim Possible. Do you remember?
It was what?
In Kim Possible. The Disney show.
I think this is one of those things where you're going to discover that I'm older than you.
Yeah,
and probably wasn't watching Kim Possible.
Yeah, it probably wasn't in your in your line of fire anyway. God, do you know what? I haven't had my coffee today and my words just aren't forming.
This is the snow. I'm serious. It's completely thrown me out of whack as well. I feel like it should be a school snow day. Mm. Like, and because I'm at home and I'm wearing hoodies and that, I feel like it is, but it isn't. I'm still working. I'm very confused as well. Don't worry. So if you've got a Switch, you can download a demo of this for free. It's in the EU store. Go and give it a go. Kirby is always lovely. And hopefully this will be too. Now, quickly, Harry Potter games. We mentioned that the Hogwarts Mystery was coming to our mobile phones. It's that one where it's a big long adventure. You play the whole 7 years at Hogwarts and you go around and talk to the teachers and learn things and make friends and all of that business. There's also another one called Wizards Unite. I feel like we've talked about them both and maybe I've conflated them in the past, but they are actually two entirely separate games. So Hogwarts Mystery being the story-based one and Wizards Unite being the one that's actually much more like Pokemon Go. We've talked about that where I reckon they should make a little wizardy, wandy thing where you could actually, you know, waggle it at the, let's face it, piece of blank air in front of your phone and pretend like you're capturing a creature or whatever, beastie. The extra bit of news on this one is that it appears to have soft launched, certainly on Google Play. I think it's in Australia, so you can get your hands on Hogwarts Mystery at the minute if you're in the right territory. So have a look at that if you're a Potterist. It's much trickier for me to skip regions on Android than it is on iPhone, though.
Mm. When Hogwarts Mystery first soft launched, like about a month ago or something, I was trying to scour the internet being like, where though? I think it was in like South Asia, but you know, it's in pre-registration now. That probably means we'll see it in like, I don't know, another month or so.
Couple of months, I reckon, yeah. Mm. It'll be here sooner than I initially thought. So keep your eyes peeled for that, Potter fans. Sticking with the AR theme, they announced a Ghostbusters game, which uses the same Pokemon Go-style AR technology to catch ghosts. It's called Ghostbusters World, and they did a little demo of it, showed a little video. And it's pretty much what you would expect, in so much as, like I assume this Harry Potter game will be, there is a proton gun wand sticking out the bottom of the screen there. You move your phone around, you look for a ghost, you find a ghost, and then you go trying to capture the ghost and then drag it into a trap. All of which is actually, again, ideally suited for your AR game. It fits really well. It makes perfect sense that this would work. And I think it's going to be a flop and no one will care.
Well, I don't think any of us care currently, do we?
It's tricky. I love Ghostbusters. I did grow up with it, not quite, I wasn't OG, but my older brothers, who were 10 years older than me, 12 years older, they loved it, and so it was in the house, and, you know, I was a late 80s kid, so I love the original Ghostbusters, amazing film, brilliant film, love it, but I don't see anyone else caring, because I don't think Ghostbusters has been able to translate to kids of today, to the modern audiences, in the same way that other franchises that have been around for years have.
Yeah, and that's why I said in that piece the other day, because even me, a very early 90s kid, my siblings, who were all 80s children, were, you know, watching Ghostbusters and stuff on TV like every year, every Christmas or something. So I grew up watching it. But for the life of me, even I think this is just going to be one of those things that's going to like launch. Everyone's going to be like, oh, this is fun. And then the next week it'll be forgotten.
It's going to appeal to the 30-somethings because they're the people who still care about Ghostbusters. The problem is they haven't been able to translate that love into anything that younger kids can get on board with. Pokemon stayed big ever since it first appeared, like way back in 8-bit era, and it's managed to maintain popularity and the love's been passed down through generations. Ghostbusters, you had the two films in the 80s, and you had the Ghostbusters cartoon, the real Ghostbusters, which was, incidentally, brilliant. And show run by the guy who then went on to write Babylon 5. So there's a lot of love around that era. But then nothing. A couple of like extreme Ghostbusters cartoons or something. And then we all know what happened with the film last year, where it didn't do well at the box office, basically. It did fine, like 400 million, just under. But given the budget, it wasn't enough to really justify a sequel. And it was supposed to, you know, kickstart the whole brand new franchise and everyone was going to love it again. And it didn't really happen. It didn't really take off. So I am not expecting this to become the next big Pokemon Go style craze, really.
Nah. This is where Harry Potter Wizards Unite has the leg up. Because, of course, again, it's a massive franchise that's still going to be passed down from my era.
Yes.
Because I know for sure if I ever have children, they will know Harry Potter. That will probably be their first word.
They will get the books read to them as children, and they will see the films and all that business. Yes, I completely agree. There's going to be two games which are very much the same thing launched, and I have a sinking suspicion which one is going to be forgotten within a week.
Mm.
And finally, as I briefly mentioned, Tamagotchis. We talked about these in previous podcasts, that they were going to be bringing them back to mobile, or bring them to mobile for the first time, in fact. What we've discovered is we got ourselves a release date, 15th of March, on iOS and Android. My Tamagotchi Forever will go live.
Hooray!
Isn't it exciting? You can pre-register over on Google Play if you want to. I've got to imagine it's going to be free, but I'm just going to click the pre-registration thing and see. It doesn't have any price, but it's got to be a free-to-play thing, and then they'll give you in-app purchases. Like, do you want your Tamagotchi to eat tonight? it's gonna cost you 99 cents. You don't love your Tamagotchi? Well, that's fine. You can just
watch it die slowly.
Watch it die over this evening.
Yeah, wow. I do think though I was coming to a realization while I was doing this the announcement article the other day, because I'm still psychologically scarred from my Tamagotchi,
and rightly so.
You know, there's nothing worse than waking up to find your pet dead. So a Tamagotchi pet, not my pet. we're not doing this again. but the possibility of my pet dying created such an anxiety in me that, like, when they announced Tamagotchi, I was like, okay, now I can get behind this, but what if it's going to die, though? I'll never be able to sleep again. But I have a feeling that because today's, you know, they're very conscious about today's generation of children, they probably won't kill the Tamagotchi. They'll just make it whiny.
I think I might steer clear. As I mentioned before, I never got into it in the first place. But I've got enough things demanding time in my life. I've got actual real pets outside who I'm trying to keep warm in the snow. I don't need a little thing on my phone whining at me that it needs to be fed.
Mm.
But you can get them. March 15th, both iPhone and iPad. If you register now, if you want to feel bad about something on your phone that doesn't actually exist. Alto's adventure captured the imagination of mobile gamers back in 2015 by taking an extreme winter sport, in this case snowboarding, and turning it into a visually arresting and surprisingly zen endless racer. Now, Snowman Games and core art and dev dude Harry Nesbitt are back with Alto's Odyssey, which went live on the App Store last week. I am joined by Ryan Cash from Snowman and Harry today. Thanks for joining me both, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Reacting to the success and the feedback that I assume you have gotten from Alto's adventure over the past couple of years, have you been able to boil it down and work out why it proved as popular as it did? Was it the endless nature or the visuals or the trick set? What was your most common kind of positive reaction?
I actually think it's probably a combination of a bunch of things. I think the game itself stood out quite a bit from some of the other games released around the same time period for sort of having a unique art style, but more than that, kind of having that relaxing and zen quality to the game makes it something that you almost feel you look forward to spending time with. I know, like, during development, we played it a lot to obviously test the game and to work on it, but we also found ourselves playing it to relax. The fact that it is endless means there's always a reason you can come back and play, and with the ever-changing landscape of the game, there's sort of a lot to see and discover. And then we baked in quite a bit of goals and achievements to kind of knock off, and there's characters to unlock, so there's a lot to do in the game, and then beyond that, you could also compete with friends for high score. But I think a lot of what people told us was, you know, it was a kind of game that people were proud to keep on their devices over the course of a few years, even if they're just going back to it on, you know, the odd flight or something like that.
Did you hear similar sort of stuff, Harry?
Yeah, I think we definitely wanted to allow players to approach the game in whatever way appealed to them. Like, that might be chasing a high score. It may be competing with friends, but it also might just be, you know, a few minutes of escapism. You know, people who are, you know, perhaps on a commute or in an otherwise noisy or stressful situation, they could put on a pair of headphones and just kind of almost transport themselves to the world of the game. And I think from an art standpoint, that was definitely something we wanted to really explore, was almost to create a world within the game that is incidental to the game that takes place in it. It's hopefully has an internal consistency and logic that players can kind of connect to and feel like it's a real place for the, you know, the short amount of time that they spend there.
I guess it also helps with the ubiquity of the device and the platform that you guys have made it for. I mean, was it always going to be a mobile game? Was that the platform that you guys were gearing for? Did you consider putting it elsewhere?
Yeah, my background was strictly kind of on the iOS side of things. So that was really the only platform that I was thinking about. And I think the same might go for Harry, but I'll let him speak to that in a second. I think that was sort of like our bread and butter. And we actually started Snowman off as a company that made productivity apps for the iPhone. So our very first project was a to-do app, and we almost accidentally got into the game space, but it was always sort of a natural extension for us to do that for iOS. I think Apple's devices really lend themselves to the Alto series because we sort of seem to have similar values on design and art, and it's just sort of like we know the way that people will experience Alto on an iOS device will be exactly as we intended it.
You'd have to deal with quite the same degree of fragmentation as you do on Android, I guess.
Yeah.
At least initially. Then obviously you put it over, which involved a slight shift, not just of, I assume, you know, translating it with the help of, was it Noodlecake you guys worked with on the first one? Yeah. Mm-hmm. The help of them to bring it over. But you also changed the payment model because both Alto's Adventure and Alto's Odyssey remain premium games. So we're talking like $4.99 for Odyssey, which came out last week.
Mm-hmm.
But when you did Adventure on Android, you shifted to free to play. Is that because of what I hear at all the conferences, which is just don't try and release anything premium on Android because we'll get no revenue and everyone will pirate it?
Yeah, I think that was definitely the thing that sort of sparked us to try out free to play on Android. We had talked to a ton of people in the indie game space who had brought their premium paid games from iOS to Android, and I pretty much never heard anything good. So we sort of said, like, okay, you know, what could we do? And I think just before Alto's Adventure came out, maybe a few months, Crossy Road had launched on iOS and maybe Android at the same time, I'm not sure. But that was sort of an eye-opening experience to me, where I sort of saw that, you know, free-to-play doesn't have to be evil, and it doesn't have to be, you know, trying to sell you a $100 gem kit or something like that in the game. It can actually be done in an elegant way. So let's sort of take a leap of faith and see if we can do it a different way. iOS devices are always kind of a premium device. You sort of are likely to be in the middle class to purchase them just because they're not cheap. And Android phones range from, you know, $50 phones all the way up to the same sort of $1,000 price range you see with the iPhone. So I think in order to reach that market, you can't necessarily sell a paid game.
I was just going to add that from like a development standpoint as well, like it's significantly more manageable, I think, to develop first for iOS in terms of the range of devices, as you mentioned. Like we've just found that amongst even quite a small team such as ourselves and friends and family, we can sort of account for the entire product range of Apple devices and be able to, you know, be sure that the game is working on all of those as expected. With Android, obviously, that's a much bigger you know, set of variables to play with, and it's not as simple as just hitting the export for Android button as some people might think.
No, optimizing for literally thousands of different models is
exactly, and we want to make sure that it's as polished as an experience as possible across all of those devices. So it's not something we take lightly.
And that is something that you do identify with what is now a series, I guess, because they do have a very kind of polished sheen. With Alto's Odyssey, you've moved from the snow to the sand, but the core game still remains very much intact. There's a couple of new features, the most notable of which for us was the wall grinding you've added, which kind of allows you not only to be constantly going down, but start to grind up these cliff faces that approach you in the background, and it lets you do a few more tricks as a result. What was the thinking behind that? Why did you think that, right, if we're going to add something, this is going to be it?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely sort of went back to the drawing board with mechanics. We sort of, when we started development, we kind of didn't want to take anything for granted, and we didn't want to just be rehashing old things for the sake of it. We wanted to make sure the things that we're keeping are justified and kind of integral to the experience, and anything new could fit in without sort of disrupting the balance.
Yeah.
And we actually brainstormed and prototyped quite a number of different ideas for new mechanics. We kind of set up like a little interno alto jam where we just tried everything that we could think of that sounded fun.
Okay.
And we quickly realized that there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't work. And we realized that actually the kind of guiding principle for us was that it needed to be something that you could do with a single touch, without any gestures, and ideally without needing two hands.
Gotcha. What ideas did you jettison, just out of curiosity? What did you try?
There was a grappling hook at one point.
Really? You went hookshot?
Yeah, we played with that a little bit.
Okay.
That's the one that comes to mind. I think there's a lot that ended up on the cutting room floor, but I think what that meant is the stuff that found its way in was the strongest of that set, and the wall riding was the most fun by far. And yeah. It what that opened up was this kind of more verticality in the levels. Like, you can spend a lot more time airborne by using these walls to chain tricks together. So much like the wingsuit, it really sort of opens up that potential for combos. And it's just a fun, satisfying inversion of the kind of other stuff that you're doing. And it has this nice tactile quality, which I think, yeah, it felt like a sort of instant click when we played with it.
Mm-hmm. You do seem to get a lot more airtime in this game, just between the wall grinding, which allows you to travel upwards. You've got the hot air balloons, which is mm-hmm. what ties the previously on the adventure. They were just sort of set grinding lines, if you like, but mm-hmm. because of the balloons, everything is a little bit more in motion, isn't it? So things will rise and you can bounce off the top of the balloons as well. So there's much more opportunity to kind of fly, as it were.
Yeah, actually all the grind rails in the game are dynamic to some extent. They uh-huh. either they snap or they blow in the wind. That was something we really wanted to kind of, we almost rebuilt that entire system from scratch to allow for like multiple grind rails on top of one another and to have them move in different weather conditions and stuff like that.
But the actual stunt part of it, i.e. the moves that your little rider Alto has, mm-hmm. remains the same. It remains that single long press, slow back flip, that's it. Did you ever mm-hmm. consider throwing in extra switches, tricky moves, that kind of thing? Or were you always going to go, no, it has to remain this single one touch purity?
I think that was definitely something that crossed our minds for at least a second, even probably during the development of Alto's Adventure. But for us, I think we really wanted to make sure that Alto's Odyssey felt like, almost in a way, more Alto. We're very sort of hesitant to depart too much in terms of the core game mechanic and the way that the game feels. And I think for us internally, I think a lot of the times we would see a sequel to something, whether it was a book or a movie or a game. And I think this is just something that a lot of people sort of seem to talk about is, let's say there's someone's favorite movie and they're making a new one. A lot of people go, oh no, they're making a new one. Like, they're going to totally ruin it. And sometimes sequels are better than, the originals, but a lot of the time they go too far, I think. So for us, mm-hmm. we wanted to make sure that we were really just sort of giving people more of what they enjoyed about the first game and sort of taking everything that little bit of a step further, whether it was like the audio design that Todd did or adding, small new mechanics that go a long way when they kind of culminate together, but without changing, the core interactions and the core feeling of the game. So that if you mm-hmm. if you jump back into Alto's Adventure, it still feels very much like the same game.
It definitely helped to not think about the game as a sequel. Uh-huh. With that as a kind of design philosophy, I think helped keep us on the right track and avoid some of those pitfalls. So we're like, this is a standalone game. Hopefully it can exist alongside Adventure. And if players discover this first, then that's great. We don't want to put them off and make it feel like they've missed something and equally deny them the option to go back and play Adventure second. We sort of want them to feel like they exist together.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting you mention it, because I was talking to Emily on last week's podcast, my co-host, about this. And we really liked the game. It got, very good reviews over at Pocket Gamer. I did the video review and we were all sort of on board. And we did notice that it was small changes, subtle things, lots of visual flourishes, but the core was very much the same kind of thing as we'd experienced the first time out, which I've seen people in comments under videos and whatnot complain about. I've seen people coming around saying, oh, it's the same game, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. From people who've watched the video and maybe haven't actually played the thing, so they don't, mm-hmm. Maybe not speaking from physical experience. But given the nature of the game, the Zen quality that it has, if you start bolting on too much to this, if you start adding lots of different tricks and like combos that you could do with both thumbs or something like that, it suddenly stops becoming the game that it is supposed to be. It becomes suddenly a stressful Twitch stunt game. And that's not really what it is it?
I mean, we definitely struggled with that, even with the things that we did add. Particularly in a procedural game like this, the more you add, the quicker that sort of translates into chaos. And so we spend a lot of the development process trying to tame the chaos into something that is manageable and fun and hopefully not overwhelming, while still having that sort of skill ceiling for players to strive towards. It's definitely a tricky balance, and it's potentially a risk that we understood. People might perceive this as quote unquote just a reskin.
Yeah,
but we kept that firmly in mind throughout the whole process, and tried our very best to avoid that trap. We wanted to find a unique voice for this game that justified itself and hopefully stands apart in all the right ways from the first.
Now, you guys have a somewhat unique operating setup here, where you, Ryan, are over there in Canada with Snowman Games, which is the outfit you mentioned, whereas Harry is actually based in London and works with some other people, a sound guy over there as well. Is that a difficult thing to coordinate? I've heard of studios which have different encampments, and when you're in different time zones and trying to coordinate and talk to each other, is it as nightmarish as it sounds, or is it quite harmonious?
I think there are pros and cons. We've talked about this before, internally, and I think the cons are like what you would expect. There's sometimes a delay of communications. I'm sort of signing off often as other people are kind of just getting into the swing of their day.
Mm.
But I think also what that provides is a little bit of distance, and everybody's got their own space and time to kind of just get on with what they know they need to do. We don't necessarily sort of micromanage everything in that way. So everyone kind of roughly knows exactly what they need to be getting on with. And we just check in. We usually do like a weekly stand up, for example, and we're on Slack most of the day. So we're definitely in close communication, and the times that we're not, like, I think we benefit from that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's kind of similar to the whole like working from home or working in an office together situation, where for certain things it's so nice to just be able to like walk over to somebody and say, hey, what do you think of this? And they say, oh yeah, maybe change this, and it's done in 30 seconds, whereas that same thing overseas can take 2 or 3 days, with the time difference, different people's work schedules. Like, I think a lot, like when we were working on Alto's Adventure, I used to be much more of a night owl. So I didn't often wake up until 11 a.m. and I would work till 3 or 4 a.m. And Harry, I think, was much more of a morning person. So we'd almost entirely miss each other for the day. Now it's a bit different and the team's a lot bigger. But I think so for those things, it's sometimes great to have people in person, but at the same time, like Harry said, having your own space and being able to, work in your ideal environment goes a long way. Like, I'm working from home today, and after a few crazy weeks in the office, and it's actually kind of nice, and I can focus and there's no distractions. So it's sort of the best of both worlds. Then of course we kind of hang out at conferences and things like that a few times a year, and have been trying to do sort of meetups in either city as well.
I see. Are you looking at potential other either franchises or games that you're working on entirely separate from the Alto project? Or are you already focusing on the next Alto? Or what are you looking at the minute?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very early days. We've been very focused on just getting this game out of the door. So we certainly don't have concrete plans for what comes next. But I think just judging by the reaction and the way players are responding to this game. It certainly shows that there is a desire for this kind of experience. And I think as long as we see that reaction, we're always going to be excited to explore that further. As a small team, we have to just take things one at a time.
And presumably find a new surface to slide down.
Well, exactly. We've done snow, and we've done sand. What else could it be?
We're running out of frictionless things. Let's get down. A nice meadow. I could see a nice, clear, sunny meadow. People do wakeboarding or whatever it's called, don't they?
Yeah, exactly.
That could be a thing.
I mean, we technically got a little bit of wakeboarding in Odyssey, but I don't want to spoil that surprise for some people.
Spoilers. Well, congratulations with the release. We think it's a quality game and look forward to whatever it is that you guys work on next. And thanks ever so much for taking the time to talking to us today.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been a pleasure being on the show.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Out and about this week, we're going to start off with what is probably my favorite game of the week, a surprise release from HAL Games. We talked about Kirby earlier on coming to Switch. Well, this is the company that makes Kirby. They've released a mobile game. As I understand it, it's been out in Japan for a while, and it's only just this week, pure surprise, been ported over to Western stores. It's called Part-Time UFO, and it is a premium game. I think it's about a few pounds. It's not a 99 cents thing. You play the role of a little UFO character. It's a side-on, like side-scrolling thing, very, very small, contained area, and the idea is your UFO is basically being used as a kind of grabbing machine. You know, in the arcades, the little grabbers that come down, and you try and grab the fluffy toy, and then it comes up, and the fluffy toy falls out, and you lose lots and lots of money trying to get the fluffy toy. It's that. Your little alien drops a little claw out the bottom and goes, meek-jump. And your job is to grab stuff and put it in, either put stuff on a platform, put things in the back of a van, whatever it might be. There are lots of different scenarios, so each level is kind of like a little mini game. It starts off in a farmyard where you're like, right, you've got to get these cows into the back of this truck so they can be taken to be slaughtered, maybe. I don't know. I'm just superimposing my own view of what's happening here. I'm sure that's not baked into the DNA when they were coming up with the game, because it's very cute and sweet and, you know, lo-fi and cartoony. But you have to do that. And then there's things where you wind up in a circus and there's an elephant on a trapeze holding a little balancing thing, and you have to stack creatures on either side without the whole thing tipping over. And you have to build Tetronomo blocks at one point. You have to assemble museum artifacts, like a big totem pole, stack them all on top of each other. So that's the idea behind it. It is really, really charming and a lot of fun because it's all physics. It's got the same grabber mechanic thing where, you know, your claw comes down, you grab it, and it pulls up, and it's, you know, it's holding it, but it's not holding it with any great degree of strength. So you have to be careful how you fly around the screen, how you move it, because it's very likely that whatever you're holding will just fly out of the claws. So it's all about slowly droop over the left and then drop it down, not like that. Oh, I've dropped it, god damn it, I'm going to pick it up again. And you're doing it against the clock. That's always one medal of the three medals. Get it done within the time limit. And then there are little bonus things, like you can stack stuff in a certain order, for example. Pick up extra objects you don't need to. Or in some cases, when you're in the museum, for example, there's a thief in the museum and he'll be hiding, or she will be hiding, in an artifact somewhere in the background. So it pays to replay the levels. A lot of it will be, actually, you go back and replay the levels to try and get the extra medals. And this is one of those games where I will happily go back and play the levels again and again till I've got the perfect score, because it's just really fun. And every time you play, it will be a slightly different experience because you know, physics will take over and it's got that random element that a good physics engine always brings in. I love it. It's only 27 levels long, but you get a lot of fun for your buck, and they're very, very replayable, as I say. John Monday's reviewing it as we speak. I've already captured a load of footage, so I'm doing the review today as soon as the stuff is ready, because I think it probably is my game of the week. It's £3.99, or $3.99, and I would highly recommend everyone go and at least take a look at the review and see if they think it'll be worth it, because I really do think it's worth it. Now, you've been playing something on the Switch now called, is it Malacca?
It's Malacca, and I've probably butchered it.
Now, just from the little video thing, looks like a lovely big 3D adventure. Am I wrong?
Nope, you're bang on there.
Okay, so what's the deal with this one?
Well, like you said, it's a 3D adventure, since it's got those nice little sort of non-detailed shapes in it, which are very, very appealing in this sort of adventure.
It is low poly, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, it is. It's nice. And it's based on the Tarahumara, if I've said that right.
Looks right, yeah.
Which are an ancient tribe in northern Mexico.
Okay.
And they're kind of, I think there's something about them being the star children or the children of the stars, where each of their souls, men have 3 souls and women have 4 because, you know, they birth children. And it's about their souls when they die, they go back up to the stars, which is lovely for me as a mythology buff because I like this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the whole basis of the game. And you, as one of the Tarahumara shamans, have to help bring the earth back to balance, as it were.
Okay.
So you've got different levels. You've got, I think it's 5 different levels.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got to go and meet each different demigod. And if you face a boss at the end of each level, you get new, you know, abilities and powers and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, there's nothing particularly groundbreaking about the mechanics or the way it's set out or the combat or anything like that, but it's just nice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of get from one point of the level to the other, you finish that level, you move on, and then they introduce new elements as you go rather than just laying them all on you at once.
Yeah, as a shaman, it looks like you have a few magical style powers when you smash your staff on the floor and big old whirlwinds, and you can turn into a bear!
Yeah, because each of the demigods are a different animal.
Right.
So I think you acquire their abilities.
Yeah, I see. It actually looks, I like the style of it. They say very, very low poly, and it's like, you know, Breath of the Wild in terms of a 3D third-person action exploration adventure, but obviously very, very minimal in its style, like low detail, jaggedy edges and poly, for a stylistic reason, presumably.
Mm.
And looks nice, and you're fighting big frogs and giant rock monsters, like you say. So yeah, it looks like it'd be fun. Anything, unfortunately, on the Switch is going to, I imagine, pale in comparison to Breath of the Wild.
Obviously.
But then everything does, so what are you going to do? It's an eShop only game, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no physical release just yet.
No, and it's only a cheapie, so it's like $19, I think, digitally, if you buy it. So you're reviewing this one so people can look out for it maybe early next week, the review?
Yeah, I'll be getting it in early next week.
Wicked. All right, then. So Mulaka is the name of that one. Do go check it out. Briefly, sticking with the Switch, Outlast Bundle of Terror, it's called. Also dropped by surprise on the EU eShop for £19.99. It says Bundle of Terror. What that actually means is rather than it being Outlast 1 and 2 as a bundle, it's Outlast, the original game, and it's DLC, the Whistleblower DLC.
Yeah. Is it bad that I think that the Whistleblower DLC is actually better than the second game?
I don't know. I've never played Outlast.
Really?
Yeah, as a
horror
man.
You're a horror aficionado.
I know. But for me, when I first saw it, it looked like a cheapy thing, and it was around the time PT came out, and I was like, meh. It just looked like, you know, wandering around in the dark with the night vision camera and jump scares, and so it looked cheap and not very good to me. I understand, actually, it's good, the first game, and the second one's pretty good too, so I haven't played it. I'm not going to cast my own judgment. I probably should get it in a bundle cheap on the PS4, but again, another first-person horror game arriving on Switch after last week's Layers of Fear, so not bad. Not cheap either, £19.99, but then I suppose you get the full bundle. I only say that because I think you can get it for about a fiver on PS4.
Yeah, same on PC, but it's been out for longer, isn't it? But, yeah. You know, the Whistleblower DLC is like, I think it's a good few hours long.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not too bad.
Why do you think it's better than the main game?
I don't know. The Outlast 2 kind of had a direction it was going, and then it just went, nah. I don't know. It was like more of the same. Like, if you've played Outlast 1, you've played Outlast 2.
Okay.
Whilst Whistleblower DLC added to the story of Outlast 1.
Right.
And Outlast 2 just didn't tickle me, man. It really didn't.
Fair enough.
I think it used too much of its previous tricks and also used a lot of stuff that we're kind of too used to seeing in these indie horror games now.
Right.
Like, it's got this scary-ass woman who just kind of walks around and tries to kill you all the time, and eventually it just becomes annoying.
Yeah, the J-horror woman with the dark hair that's in everything.
Yeah, pretty much. So she's like, she's in it. And it's like, okay, well, now I just need to avoid you. You're not scary anymore. You're just irritating.
Fair enough. All right, well, you can get that on your Switch at the minute. Now, switching back to iOS and mobile, we've got loads of stuff. So very quickly, Lichtspear came out on iOS. And this is one we've already covered in a previous podcast. We don't need to do the review again. When it came out on the Switch, you liked it. I've played it now and done the review for iOS. I really like it. We said at the time that like this would work really well on mobile because it's based around, it's a 2D adventure where some guy's throwing a spear, like a tower defense game. And given the fact that you're trying to aim the trajectory of a spear, a little bit like Angry Birds, I was like, oh, this would work perfect. And lo, it works perfectly on iOS and is really fun and charming and daft. And yeah, controls just effortlessly. I've got the review up on AppSpy. I like it a lot and it's probably worth it. It's more expensive, maybe £6 or something. And that's putting people off, but I think it is well cool. So go and have a look at Lichtspear. Peak Rider, downhill snowboarding game, again, following after the likes of the Altos games. But this is third person, view from behind, SSX tricky style. And it's kind of an auto runner. It's not really about pulling off loads of amazing tricks using skill. It's about going really close to trees and bushes and rocks as you fly by, burnout style. So it automatically moves forward. You try and dodge, only just skim the side of it, like you try and, you know, go really close to vehicles as you're overtaking or when you're on the other side of the road in burnout. And that charges your trick power. So that then when you get to a jump or something, you can just tap the screen and it will start performing tricks. And depending on how charged you are, that alters the coolness of your trick and the points you'll get from it. So that's the idea. Harry, I think, liked it more than me. I thought it was samey and I didn't take any pleasure in the tricks really, so actually I thought it was a bit blander than the review sounds, but I didn't write it, so it wasn't my place. But this is my place, the podcast. Yeah, and I can say I don't think it's very good. Yeah. But it's free and you can give it a try if you like. No harm, I suppose. Also, Evoland 2, which is a sequel to an RPG, top-down, 16-bit style JRPG, you know, adventure. You know the score. You've played Legend of Zelda, ARPG, where you're hacking things through and carving up bushes and that. The trick with this one is that you're flitting between different eras of gaming. So, like the first one, you start out in 8-bit Game Boy style, where everything's green and black as a training area. Then you go into a 16-bit style Chrono Trigger area. And then something weird happens and suddenly everything goes like 8-bit and you're back in what looks like an original Zelda, albeit with a little bit more colour in it. So that's the kind of trick it's playing. It's a self-aware RPG where it's making references to all the RPGs we love, nod, wink, etc. Apparently, we had a bit of an issue with the first game. I never played the first one, but I've played this one. This has got a little bit more sincerity to it. Like, it's doing the nudging and the winking, but it's more fun in its own right, if you like. So we've given it a slightly better rating, a better review than the previous one, but, you know, it's for specific people who want a bit of irony with their RPGs. What else we got? Bridge Constructor Portal appeared on Switch. This was originally out on iPhone, iPad, Android. We've already covered it. We actually think it's a good game. It might be a tough sell at £13.50, which is what it is on the Switch. Have you played the original?
I feel like I did.
Made a huge impression then.
I haven't had my coffee, okay? I'm dying slowly inside. No, I did. I think I played through like the first 7 levels.
Okay.
I think to the point in which they stopped like giving me advice. And I thought it was clever how they managed to merge Bridge Constructor together with Portal.
Yeah. It's really charming. It's cleverly done, I think. But I get the impression it was free on iOS. Maybe?
No, I don't think it was. Well, I think it was like a few quid or something.
Okay, all right, fine. But it certainly wasn't, you know, £13, put it that way. Probably a fiver.
The Switch one's £13.
£13.50, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, I wouldn't pay that. Sorry, I was listening and I kind of wasn't as well.
You sketched out, didn't you?
I did. I got caught.
But it's a good game. That's the thing. It is a good game, really nicely done. Check out the mobile review that we've got. But I guess be warned, it's a little bit more pricey on Switch. The last one I'll mention, I haven't played this, but Harry's, I think he's reviewed it already, but Holy Potatoes, We're in Space is a weird sounding name, but B, it's a turn-based space exploration game. You're looking after your spaceship, top-down isometric view, craft weapons. It's kind of a quasi-spiritual sequel to the Holy Potatoes, A Weapon Shop, which was you managing a weapons thing. We liked the first one. It was a big indie pitch thing. I think we like this. It's £6.99, $6.99, but I won't speak to it. Now, there are actually loads and loads of other games. There's a version of Time Recoil that's come out, again, on iOS. Temple of Spikes, a Legend, Sunbird, Silent Street, Mockingbirds, a puzzle game. There's tons, but we can't get through it all. We'll be here for 2 hours. So I suggest, as I mentioned before, Em has done a big old roundup of all the new releases on the platforms this week. She does it every week. Go and find it. New iOS, Android, and Nintendo Switch games. Search that on PG and you will discover every new release you can possibly wrap your fingers around. Okay. I'm going to go and try and thaw my rabbits out.
Yeah. Oh, they must be so cold.
Weirdly enough, they are all right. I was paranoid all of yesterday about, oh my God, they're going to be freezing to death out there. I've got to try and find a way to bring them inside and put them in a box and everything. And I'd clad the hutch in loads and loads of stuff, wrapped carpet around it and everything. I go out there and go to get them out. It's warm as hell in there. I put my hand in. It's like, this is warmer than my office.
It's because they got little fur coats.
You little furry gits. Yeah, so I was outraged. I was like, all right, can I come in there with you? It's really nice.
They can save you instead.
Yeah, so that's what I'll do instead. I'm going to go and hang out with my rabbits in the hutch for a bit. and everyone listening, thank you for listening. Hopefully we will be able to leave the premises next week. But we won't. We'll stay here and record more gaming podcasts for you lovely people. So thanks. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.